6 o'clock, I'll call the meeting to order. Let's see, who do we have here? We have Bart Olson. We have Joel Frieders. We have Alderman Trancier. We have Alderman Milchinski. We have Katie. We have Alderman Funkhauser. And who did I miss?
We have Marlis.
No, I'm sorry. Okay. Citizen comments. We receive anything in writing from anyone for nothing. Right. Moving on to the next item. Minutes for correction, May 7th, 2020. Comments, corrections? Thumbs up from everybody?
Yep, looks good.
All right. New business, PS 2020-17, monthly report review for April and May 2020. Chief.
All right. So there in the packet is the April and May. I'm just going to go through April real quick and kind of breeze through some things. Obviously, with COVID-19, April, we were still in the midst of COVID-19. We still are. But as far as activities here at the police department, if you look at our total overtime under the personnel information, that month we only had 29.5 hours, which is awesome. So we had limited overtime there. Some of our community policing initiatives, you know, we're trying to eat local and so just showing you the different places that we ate at during the month there, and some of the places ate at multiple times. We also had autism. April was Autism Awareness Month. And so we've, over the course of this last year, we have reached out to many families in the city who have autistic children.
Mm-hmm.
And so our goal is to build relationships with them so that when we are called to a house for, you know, any type of police service, that we are, you know, hopefully we've built that relationship.
Right.
And an example that I can tell you actually did work. We were called to a house in Marketplace for a domestic violence call. And one of the children that was involved, who was autistic, who was a pretty large young man. You could hear yelling through the door. We knocked on the door, and as soon as he answered the door, he saw Sergeant Carlisle. And he goes, "Hey guys, how are you?" And immediately was able to calm things down, which is
that's
why you do it, right? And it was it was really cool to see. So we had 30 goodie bags that we kind of put together. We hand delivered to the families and to the children, and you see some of the photos on there in there about the kids. We also did our sidewalk chalk for April. Rosati's, the grand prize they gave was pizza for a year, and they gave everybody who participated a free small pizza, so it was pretty cool seeing that and going through that. It was very, very well received.
I think these things are great to get out into the community, and you know, and it not necessarily is police and doing police work, but
that's right,
just being there with the community.
Yeah, it's so important, especially in today's realm of law enforcement. So under training and career development, all of our PD staff have been trained in NIMS. We are 100% completed for the PD side of stuff. I know Bart is compiling stuff for the city side, and we're compiling all that data, putting it together. As far as traffic crashes go, the month of April, we had a total of 13 crashes, which was pretty awesome. Obviously, there wasn't a lot of people on the roadway.
Yeah.
That's the reason for the smaller numbers. Traffic enforcement, we were really only enforcing DUI, reckless driving, or something that somebody did that was just so egregious right in front of an officer. So you see very limited warnings. I think for the month of April we had 3 as compared to 333 in April of 2019. And then our detective squad, you know, we had cases assigned. The nice thing is COVID-19, one of the good things, and there's not a lot of good things, but one of the good things is it has allowed us to kind of get caught up on some things. And when we talk about May's monthly report with the attempted homicide case, and in that case there, it was so time intensive that, you know, if we would have had our normal caseload that we would typically get, it would have been very, very difficult. When you look at our reports under the crime reporting section, you see our criminal reports are down by 16 from April 2020 as compared to 19. But we're up 11 in non-criminal reports, and those are the types of reports that come out when somebody's saying, hey, there's people in the business not wearing a mask, or, you know, we get called to a particular house and, you know, it's non-criminal in nature. You know, disagreements with neighbors. And then our part two crimes, we were even. The one thing, and I don't have an answer for it, Joel, and I'm looking right at you because I know this is where you're going to go with it. The crisis intervention calls in April, we had zero. And that is a great thing. But why we had zero, I'm kind of stumped at that. But we did, which is a great thing. So with everything going on, you would think that we would have more. We haven't. So that was something kind of neat to see. So our calls for service on the second to last page, we were, and I shouldn't say calls for service, our total incidences, we were down 500 from the previous year in April, April of 2019, we had 996, and we had 496 in April of 2020. So that's
the numbers are looking good.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great if they stayed that way, although they're trending up. They're trending up.
Are we getting a lot of, you know, no masks calls? Or I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. We've actually, the no mask calls have really slowed down. We will still get people that will call and say, what are you guys doing about this?
Okay.
And when we give them our answer, I have not had one person that has been upset or yelling. No, I take that back. We've had one. We had one this last week, Monday, and she called, and you know, one of the nicest people in our department, Nicole, she took the phone call, and this lady just berated her. It was pretty bad. I did try to reach out to her to talk to her to kind of give an explanation, but she has yet to respond to my email. So, and I didn't have a phone number for her. You deal with it, you know. So during the month of May, we're slowly reintegrating traffic safety and education out there, so you're going to see a lot more traffic during the month of May. It wasn't the entire month. So if you go to overtime hours worked, you're going to see a pretty steep increase in the amount of overtime. The amount of overtime for call-out, stay-over, and for investigations that had to do with our criminal case that was at Marketplace with the shooting. And it also had to do with right at the end of the month of May were the protests. And we, you know, not knowing what was going on and sending people to other cities and our city. So you saw an increase in compensatory time as well as overtime for those two incidents. That's the large part. The good thing is it's the first month of the year. You know, in this month we're tracking pretty good with overtime. You know, obviously putting a lid on that. So knowing that we have that, we'll try to keep that down. Yeah. With July 4th coming around and it's being a super holiday, for our staff, we've limited certain things, so hopefully we can make up for some of that with our July 4th. Scrolling over to the community policing side of things, if you go over to the picture where you have Jim Bradish and myself and John, Country Financial made a donation to Operation Heroes and Operation Helping Heroes, and they gave us a check for $1,500. That, you know, I've worked with Bart and Rob on to put in there, and so where we can hopefully buy some equipment that is specific to, you know, whether it's traffic related equipment or equipment, you know, for protest as an example. If we go to respond to certain types of calls, like we have been going, you know, we have no helmet head protection, we have no face protection. And when we had officers that responded to Aurora and Naperville and places like that, that, you know, they were going through some pretty tough things. I know one of our SRT guys that worked for another department had a brick hit him right in the shoulder. Now he had pads on his shoulder. It probably would have broke his shoulder if he didn't have that on.
And he didn't have a helmet or a shield?
Well, he did because he was with our SWAT team. Okay. But our officers that we sent out there, we don't have that equipment. And to be honest with you, most agencies, your larger agencies do. We just don't. And so we are pricing some of that up And so
times are changing.
They are, but you know what? It's still good times, you know, and people have to, it's kind of scary. Makes you think a little bit, but our guys are, they're doing good. So, and then at the other part, the last part of the community policing side is the Stacy Mott retiring after 25 years. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty awesome to see. As far as traffic crashes, you see that they went way up as compared to the previous month.
Yeah.
We did have, in April, we did have one fatal car crash. In May, we had zero fatals, which is great. And it happened to be in the construction zone there at 126, just east of 71. The total number of crashes, when you look at them, there are 25 that, you know, exclude private property type crashes, 29 total. We are still having a big, if you look at our intersection crashes, 126 and 47 still lead the way. And Eric and I have talked, they have reached out to, I think it's FNB Bank right there at the corner. They're going to see if they can trim the bushes down. I think it's more going to take, we got to cut that berm down just because of the, you know, the sightline issues, but, you know, obviously.
And I still can't figure out why it isn't Route 47 and Kennedy. I just, for the life of me.
Yeah.
Every time I go through there, it's like, you know.
It's crazy.
I wait because I know that damn truck is not going to stop, and they don't.
It's crazy. It's crazy. But, you know, boy, knock on wood, we've been fortunate.
People just stop like I do.
You hope so.
Don't make the turn.
Chief Johnson?
Yes, ma'am.
It's another section I noticed at 126 and 47, and it probably really is that you guys might have to talk to Eric, but that is very difficult for people to cross there. Uh-huh. That light stays, you know, the turning at 47 stays, and I walk that way, and I've seen people trying to cross to go to Smokies.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's something we can do to check with IDOT on that light for the pedestrian crossing.
Let me make a note.
I want someone to run out, you know, to get over to Smokies, and they're whipping through, you know. But it's quite a long, even when you press the button, it doesn't change. It doesn't help the pedestrians.
Gotcha. I've got a note, Jackie. I'll reach out to Eric and see if he can reach out to IDOT to see if they can check that.
Yeah.
We'll send an officer out there to check it first as well. So.
Yeah, maybe it's not working, but I noticed that the one day I was coming around there, and I'm like, man, I could see the people waiting. I went past them. I just happened to look back. They were still waiting.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
okay.
So
we'll
look into it just because it is such a bad intersection.
Yeah.
When people drive through it anyhow.
Absolutely. We'll do that. I'll hopefully have an answer for you. I probably won't be in tomorrow. We'll have somebody check it, and we'll see what we can do. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Going on to the portable speed sign results, Blackberry Shores eastbound and westbound, the data is in there in the monthly report, and that was from the month of May 4th through May 31st. Mm-hmm. You see the average speed is 26 miles an hour. The maximum speed is pretty scary when you look at both of those. In the eastbound lane, you know, you had one person going 47. The westbound, you had somebody going 52. We are trying to monitor that specific time frame where that is going on. And, you know, it's funny when they see a squad car, people slow down. So,
you usually see them too late.
Yeah, that is true. Yes, sir.
We had some emails between Alderman Funkhauser and myself and a couple of different residents just trying to kind of see what the options are once the development is finished over there. I know that there is no real historical significance to any of the data that we're collecting over there, but with the baseball season, although truncated, still starting up again, would it be possible to keep those signs in for the foreseeable future?
Sure. Let me get with Eric. I believe the signs, he's got it posted at a few different spots right now with different areas that we've had complaints at, Joel. So let me check with him. And I will let you know.
Chief Johnson?
Yes, ma'am.
How many of those signs do we have?
Four,
but you know what? Bart would probably know that better than I would. Is there four or six, Bart?
Signs?
Yeah, the speed signs.
Yeah, the speed zone.
I think there's six. Nice.
So So we have two there. Where do we have the other four? Do you know offhand?
I don't. I have not asked Eric about locations in his planning in a while. So Jim, you haven't had your employees switch the locations of any of those yet, correct? Public Works.
Eric has got a list where we know we've had some issues with speeding. The other issue, or the other place, was Grand Trail that we had a complaint at. I believe those are down on Grand Trail now and put to different spots that we've had complaints at. So Eric would have that list. I don't. But what I'll do, Jackie, is I'll email him and see if he can send them to me and to Joel's point as well.
I was just wondering, even though the offices have been doing a really good job on 47, it's out of control sometimes.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if there's a chance to rotate them there every now and then, just to make people aware of what the speed limit is and how fast they're going.
One of the things that we have to worry about on 47 is it's controlled by IDOT. And when we had a conversation with, and actually Eric was the one telling me, when we had a conversation with IDOT, because the color sign we had was yellow, if they see it up on a highway, they will take it because they only have, I believe, white signs on there.
Okay.
And so that's, we were hoping that we would be able to post something up there and deal with it. I don't know.
Bolts.
Yeah.
There's just some trucks that come barreling down and even over the bridge.
Yeah.
And like I said, okay, it's my walking. If I walked it that way, anybody walks or rides there by, you are like right next to, the street there. There's no parkway.
Yeah.
And it's scary sometimes how fast they come by. It's enough wind off of it. It will make, I know lightweight, it moves me. So, they're zooming through there. So I didn't know if that could be somehow, but I wasn't aware of that, they were, I doubt it's being picked.
What I will do, Jackie, is we'll also look to increase our efforts on 47, especially through the downtown.
No, and they've been doing great. It's actually not necessarily just the downtown. It's like coming into it. It's that intersection at 126, 47. It kind of starts there. It's picking up speed. When you're on the bridge, you would believe how they fly across the bridge.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we're down. We're through the town. Let's go.
Yeah.
So it might be. And you guys are doing a great job. I told you the one day, one of the officers was thinking outside the box and was standing on the bridge. I'm like, yeah, you go. You get the radar on the bridge. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it was. They posted that on Facebook, and we had some real good comments, and we also had some really bad comments. So it just is what it is. Our goal is to slow people down. The great part is not everybody's getting tickets. So, when they need it, they get it. If they don't need it, it's hey, just slow down through town. That's what we're asking.
It's just an awareness thing.
Sure.
For some people.
Okay, absolutely. You betcha. And then going forward with any other cases, we did have a reduction in criminal cases again as far as investigations, which, again, really, really helped us that month. When you look at reports, we were down on criminal reports, but we were up 17 on non-criminal. Overall, we were up in... we were up in our overall reports from May of 2019 as compared to May of 2020. The good thing is we were down in our Part 1 crimes, which is, more of your violent, your domestic violence, robbery, aggravated battery.
Right.
We were down there, which was really good to see. And we were down in our Part 2 crimes as well. Crisis intervention calls went from 0 on each of the categories to 3 and 2 respectively. And our incident numbers, we are still down 242 from 842 in the month of May as compared to May of 2019 at 1,084. I think a lot of that also has to do with our traffic stops. With not doing traffic stops, we don't get an incident number for that. And our guys will make well over 200 traffic stops in a month.
Yeah, I was wondering how you didn't get one felony arrested in the month of May on a traffic stop.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Felony revoked, a possession of controlled substance, and nothing.
I know. It's good. So, if you have any questions on the monthly report.
No other comments? We'll move on.
Nope, Joel's got one. Yes, sir.
Okay.
With the crisis intervention call, much like the work that you guys are doing and trying to be proactive with the autistic residents that we have in Yorkville, is there a method with which officers are aware of whether it's consistent calls for mental illness? Is there I don't want to call it labeling somebody something, but is
sure.
there a database that alerts officers to kind of be aware of previous incidents that have to do with mental illness?
That's a great question. Yes and no. So specific to mental illness, no. If we've been to a house where we have had to wrestle or threats of violence are very severe, then we would make CAD notes and we would have two officers dispatched. One of the things, one of our goals this year, Joel, is the CIT program. And BEAR is still, you know, it's a yearly goal, and this is such a big program. The two areas we will be focusing on with CIT that BEAR and I spoke about just this week, the first area is autism, and the second area is mental health crisis with involuntary committal. So those are the first two areas we're going to focus in the CIT and then kind of branch out after that, you know, see how that goes, work out the bugs, so to speak, and then try to focus on other avenues that we could add to the CIT program. So
just thinking about how your interactions with the, you know, the families of autistic children and how that kind of outreach has allowed you a direct pathway to communication, knowing that if somebody knows who you are or recognizes you or the vehicle that you pull up in, and there already is a moment of, you know, higher crisis potential, I'm just wondering if that type of outreach is either A, ever been done before, B, if it's a violation of someone's privacy, or if it's something that voluntarily we could kind of come up with a program that's similar to how BEAR tried to introduce the police officers to every autistic child in the city.
Yes.
Just trying to get ahead of these things, and these are kind of like the things that you learn from other communities, where if you have a social work approach versus a policing approach, the likelihood of the outcome becoming violent or going into that crisis stage can be minimized.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, you know, I'm just kind of planting a bug in the back of your brain, if there is a way to use that same methodology that BEAR explored with the autistic community on those who have had, you know, crisis calls. So just something to kind of throw in the back.
Absolutely. One of the programs that we have just put into policy and will be developing with CIT is our Citizens at Risk program, the CAR program. And that will be very, I think, similar to what you're talking about, Joel, where, you know, if we know we have issues, or let's just say we have somebody who has some, you know, mental illness and we've been working with the family, this is a program that we can work with that family to get that person, I guess, registered, for the lack of a better term, so that we kind of know who they are, what their triggers are in certain circumstances, and provide that information to our officers so that when we do respond, we're able to have a better understanding of what is going on.
Yeah, because I think avoiding that escalation is probably the biggest priority you're going to have going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And especially now with the fact that you have that database of the autistic, you know, families so that there's a direct outreach.
Yes.
And like a consistent communication mechanism. If that's something that we can not only kind of focus on when you move into the CIT training, but kind of explore what other programs have worked in that particular field. I think knowing that we don't have staff social workers with us, maybe that's something where the county health department might have a better understanding of what their staffing looks like, because
mm-hmm.
They're probably some of the first line responders for, you know, the walk-in type treatments. So
yes.
Just want to keep that conversation moving, sir.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Any more questions, comments? All right.
Question. How long did it take to get the charges for the attempted murder and the shooting from incident to arrest? Less than a week, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was quick.
Yeah, once we had the information, once we had the evidence to substantiate the charge, it was very quick. Brenda was all over it. Yeah.
Good enough. 2020-18, adjudication reports for May and June 2020.
Okay, going through the adjudication reports, you know, it's really kind of typical stuff that we're used to seeing. Some of the possession of cannabis charges are juveniles, or they're inside of a vehicle when they're smoking it, whether it's a juvenile or an adult. Those are the possession of cannabis by a person under 21. Yeah, there's there was one call with or one ticket that was written for 12 inches of right hand of the curb. So I pulled the ticket because that's not something we normally see. And the notes on it were that the vehicle was parked well away from the curb and right by a fire hydrant. So that's the reason that ticket was written. Again, it's kind of an unusual ticket. You don't normally see that. There was one ticket written for littering. And what that was vape cartridges that were thrown out the window because the girl did not want to have her parents find out and see the items in her vehicle. So they were thrown out in front of the vehicle. The officer actually wrote a written warning for the stop sign violation when the girl blew the stop sign, but wrote her an ordinance violation for the littering instead. And that's all I have as far as the adjudication reports.
Comments, questions? Move on to the next one. 2020-19, school district communication, intergovernmental agreement.
So this is something that has been on our public safety agenda now several times, and we pulled it off because we were waiting for the attorneys from the school district and our city attorney to get together.
Right.
This agreement was approved by the school board at their June 22nd meeting. There were no questions or discussions, at least at the school board meeting, on that. In essence, this was an agreement that we're writing or that we want to put through so that the school district and the police department can share information specific to certain types of crimes that are occurring and certain information that is received, whether it's received from us or from the school, that we can share to make sure that our school environment is the safest that we can possibly make it. It is obviously written by our attorney, but it's pursuant to and follows the Juvenile Court Act, as well as the Illinois School Code allowing the sharing of information. One of the questions that people will often ask when they go through this, why do we share information with the school? Well, it's obviously to make sure that the school is as safe as it can possibly be. We will report to one person at the school. In this case here, it can be whoever the principal decides that person to be. We would report to the school principal. If the school principal relegated that to the dean, we would then report to the dean. Our SRO is typically working with the dean, not so much the school principal. So they would then in turn have the relationship with our SRO. They would report stuff to our SRO. They're not contacting our police officers on the street. They're going strictly through our SRO. A couple key points that I definitely wanted to bring up in here was issues or crimes where we have a victim of certain types of crime, like sex assault. That information is not shared. That name is not shared with school officials because that victim has rights. So I wanted to make sure that was brought up.
Okay.
Not that we can't work with the school district. Not that we won't try to work with the parents to say, this is huge, and maybe this child has a good relationship with their counselor, and it allows that child to have somebody that they trust. We would work with the parents to hopefully communicate that with the school, a person in the school that they trust and could work with their child. Obviously, the safety of the child is the most important, as well as their physical and mental health. And then, that's pretty much all I have with that. If you guys have questions.
Here we have
Dan Transier.
The list of offenses that are included in will be reported. Article 24, weapons offenses.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Further down, you've got your Section 12.2, 12.3, 3.1, 3.2, batteries and domestic batteries.
Correct.
So those are something you have to report to the school.
Yes.
So two brothers get into a fist fight. They're 15 years old. Mom calls the police. Both of them get arrested. Mm-hmm. You need to tell the school that the brothers got arrested for domestic battery.
If those schools are both students in that school?
Assuming they are, yes.
Yes.
So the school has to know that Billy B. and Johnny B. were fighting with each other after a rough game of FIFA soccer.
Video games.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. So now, Not that we would be, the school district can't and would not do anything, But it's a question of more about, is that fight going to spill over into the school that day? Also for the teachers and or the counselor to kind of keep an eye on any one of those students. The school is going to be able to look at it and say, okay, we've got Jim Jensen was reported for this. Do we have any other issues in that school of violence where Jim Jensen is reported being? And it's kind of a way for them to kind of take that holistic approach to make sure that they're kind of watching and really paying attention, and then hopefully getting ahead of things before it becomes a problem.
Are all of these required under the law? Can you remove some of them? Like if the Cannabis Control Act, you just said that there were some teenagers who got caught smoking weed in a car. They were ticketed. That technically is a charge. So would they need to be reported to the school that they got caught smoking pot?
Right. While it says we shall report, if I catch somebody with cannabis, I think it's best judgment on our side to say, you know, that's maybe not something we need to report to them. Now, if I catch this person with a bunch of cannabis and they're dealing,
well, that's different
story.
Yeah, I'm not
different
talking
story.
About a
sure.
bagging and a scale. I'm
correct.
Talking about
that's where I think it's the judgment on our end, and that's the relationship that Goldsmith, you know, has with them to really kind of work through.
Would that same mentality apply if a 15-year-old got arrested for domestic battery against his father? The incident of it carrying to school would be non-existent. Not like the two brothers situation where they could meet after study hall or in gym class and start pounding on each other again. Because I can see that. I've got two sons, and I
sure.
can see them
maintaining
a grudge.
I think, to answer your question, I would say no. Only because if the 15-year-old has a tendency of violence in there, what we would want to do is make sure that, again, that counselor was aware of what occurred so that they can pay attention for things that they may see throughout the course of the day or the next couple days. Not that they're going to do anything with it, but if that child was arrested and then all of a sudden starts exhibiting some of the behaviors in the school, we can, again, get to it before it gets too bad, if that makes sense.
Would the facts of a particular arrest help that decision-making? Because
yes.
there are a lot of times a domestic battery isn't really a domestic battery. You know, and there are times when domestic battery is domestic battery.
Yes.
The law doesn't differentiate, but common sense surely does.
Yes. And I think, to your point, that's where we have to be very careful with not tarnishing a reputation of a child, especially at the school. And that's where we have to use our good judgment and say, okay, I understand what the letter of this says, and yes, we have to do that. Or it says we need to do that, but this may not apply to that specific circumstance, if that makes sense. And that's one of the reasons also, Dan, that we're not telling multiple people, we're telling one person. And so that we're trying not to have multiple people know.
And you're confident that confidentiality would be maintained if
yes.
that one person is informed of this?
I absolutely am confident in that, yes. This was one of the agreements that I had that we had in Oswego when I was there, and it went very, very well. Our SRO was the only one that communicated back with the principal at that time. It was the principal we reported stuff to. And then the principal was responsible to only notify the one or two people that were specific to what or the ones that needed to be informed to help that child, if that makes sense. Some cases it was social worker. Some cases it was the dean.
Right. I mean, I can see the weapons offenses.
Yep.
Some of the other things, I think kids are still entitled to their privacy. Juvenile records, for very good reason, are not public. Mm-hmm. We can't just walk into the courthouse and watch adjudication for some kid who's charged with a criminal offense.
Right.
They don't have jury trials for that specific reason.
That's right.
Because the public doesn't need to know about when a child gets arrested for any type of criminal offense.
I agree.
It really worries me when kids, especially kids who are still developing mentally, could be labeled as
absolutely
problematic when maybe the facts don't support it.
I totally understand. And again, that's, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, you only want to tell one person. But if you start seeing a trend in that particular child, it also helps us catch that early,
right, okay,
so that we can, you know, hopefully provide resources to them, you know. And in most cases, you know, we don't arrest in the school in most cases. You know, our goal is to try to get them assistance and support. So you will very rarely will you see a child being walked out in handcuffs. It's most of the time we talk with the child, we talk with the parents, the child's released to the parent, and then it's referred straight to probation.
And then 90 days later they get something in the mail. Right. Exactly. Which is the way it should be done.
Yeah, exactly. So, any other questions? Okay.
We okay with this as is then?
Sounds good.
Joel shaking his head up and down.
Okay. We're good. CC 2020-50, ordinance authorizing the mayor to enter into agreements to regulate pedestrian and vehicular traffic on commercial property.
There we go.
Oh,
sorry.
Wow.
So this was something that was previously discussed at one of the city council meetings, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, we actually was brought back to public safety just more for discussion. Let me first say this is a voluntary only agreement. This is not something we would look to force any business to get into. This is voluntary only. This does not involve us towing vehicles. I want nothing to do with towing cars on private property.
That was a concern.
Yes, it's a good concern to have. Dan brought up at the city council meeting, you know, towing vehicles leads to a lot of other, I guess, concerns. A lot of other things that can be out there, and that's part of the reason that I don't want anything to do with towing cars off private property. So this really focuses on our stopping, standing, parking, fire lane violations, restricted parking violations, people who are, you know, blocking multiple, you know, spots. We're not towing, but it gives us the authority to ticket if the business owner wants us to. One of the best examples I can give you, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, might be 3 weeks ago now, I go to Jewel, and as I'm pulling in and parking my car parallel, there was a very nice car that was parked sideways, taking up three full spots pretty close to the front of the building. And it was just, you just look at it and you shake your head. Not that that person would necessarily get a ticket, but that's the type of thing that we're talking about. Most of the time our officers will pull up and see cars parked in the fire lane. We'll pull up right next to them and say, hey, can you just park your car, you know, in the parking lot? It's a fire lane here. 99% of the people are great. There are some people that will say, I'm not parked. And we're like, hey, listen, you are parked. You're not moving. You just need to move it because it's a safety thing. And most of the people move it. So not looking to make this at all a revenue generator. This just gives us the ability to make sure we enforce certain things that the businesses are wanting us to enforce on their property.
And this is not something that is going to create a need for more officers of time involved. This is not really adding to the...
No, not at all. We're already patrolling the areas, so we're already there. It's not going to create any extra work. Great question. One of the things that I passed out to the gentleman here was an email that Bart had forwarded me from Lynn. And Lynn has reached out. The date of the email is June 24th. She's reached out to multiple business owners or representatives of the development companies that are allowed to, or at least authorized to do this. Yorkville Crossing, which is Menards, Yorkville Marketplace, Kendall Marketplace, Kendall Crossing, Heartland Center, Walgreens 34 and 47, Raging Waves, or just to name a few. They are all expressed a high interest in the enforcement agreement with the city of Yorkville. So it was, you know, when you look at doing things like this, you want to make sure that, you know, do businesses really want it? And if they don't want it, there's no sense in bringing it forward. This is one of the things that they have expressed an interest in. And I would treat this as we would on any traffic stop. You know, we're not out there to write people tickets. We're out there to educate. So I would see us treating this no different than how we would do traffic
stops. I assume if you saw some flagrant violation of speeding or reckless driving, that you would take action under those circumstances, but you're not looking for every little...
Yeah, absolutely. Handicap violations are probably the ones that really rub people the wrong, you know, the most,
yes,
you know, and the wrong
yes
way.
Yes.
And, you know, when people aren't supposed to be parked in handicap spots, I mean, they're there for a reason. So
makes sense.
Any questions on that?
We okay with sending that one in for the council? We're all good.
The only question is, it's not something where you're going to be adding responsibility. It's going to be, what's the word I'm looking for? More of an understanding that particular properties, if there is something, you know, I guess what I'm trying to kind of summarize in my own head is the alternative being previously you, there's not an understanding between you and the property owner. Property owner could take issue with anything that you do on their property.
Yes.
That they didn't request, right?
Yes.
So if a property owner called you and said, hey, there's a group of people in my parking lot doing burnouts or something like that, is that something where this wouldn't be required for you to be able to step in and kind of enforce something in the merits of protecting the public safety? Or is that something where, nope, sorry, it's private property, we can't go there?
So, answer to your question, yes and no, depending on what the offense is. Reckless driving is something we can enforce on private property. It's one of the only things we can enforce on property. It's not the only thing, but it's one of the only things that we can enforce. If somebody is saying, or if somebody's doing something that is not something we can enforce through the Illinois Vehicle Code, but the business owner calls us and wants them removed, then what we're going to do is say, okay, do you want them removed? We'll go out there and talk to them. And say the business owner wants them out. If the people refuse to leave, then the other remedy we have is the business owner has the right, because it's their property, to charge somebody with criminal trespass. Same things we would do right now, Joel, handling any sort of incident on private property. That's the same thing we would do right now. So it's really nothing different.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We good? Old business. PS 2020-14, Neighbors by Ring Doorbell Program update.
Yeah, so this was it's a discussion point only. After our last meeting of public safety, I was talking to Kathy, and it wasn't on the agenda to be discussed at the entire city council meeting.
Right.
Usually, when you know we bring stuff to this committee and to the city council, there's usually an IGA or a memorandum of understanding or whatever it may be, an MOU. Ring used to require that. They no longer require that. All they require is more of an acknowledgement form that we want to participate in their program. Because of that, I know we had a discussion here, I wanted to bring it back to this committee to say, are you in favor of me signing and just starting with the program, or is this something you would like me to bring up or you guys would like to discuss at city council to have any other, or to have the city council's approval or any other questions asked? So I'm more just coming to you, what would you guys like me to do with it?
For me, I'm good with just leaving it with this group, but I that's my opinion.
That's fine with me. I know I had some questions when it was brought up at a full meeting, and they were answered.
Yeah, you've answered all my questions, so I...
Okay. Just to let everybody know again, this is voluntary. We have no access to video. This basically deals with efficiency of operation when it comes to us going through neighborhoods and canvassing, and allows people to actually send us video of things. But it's their doing. It's them sending it to us. We have no access to this system to get in. We actually ask them for their help. That's it.
Jackie?
I was just
going
to ask that. If we had an incident in my backyard and my Ring picked it up, so would you, like, say you needed that, would you go to that homeowner and say, hey, we know she had a Ring, would you be willing to share? Or do you wait for them to come forward?
So we would do both. And in some cases, depending on the circumstance, we will do a canvas anyway with what we have, but we would specifically be looking for video-type camera systems, whether it's a light or a doorbell. And then we would specifically go to that residence and saying, hey, we had this occur. Would you mind sharing? Or could you check your video to see if it captured anything? And if it did, would you mind sharing it with us? They say no.
I was just curious.
Yeah. Yep. Good question.
Okay.
Joel, are you all right leaving it with this group, or?
Yeah, I mean, like, as a Ring owner myself, previously Ring was the only kind of horse in the race, and now they're kind of like the slowest. So while they did try to merge into a social media type way of sharing this type of information, the camera sucks. So knowing that someone has a video doorbell or outdoor camera is a far better kind of path to trot, in my opinion. So yes, the intent is great, and I'm glad that, you know, there's something official, but it would be a violation of everyone's privacy if police had, you know, unbridled access to other people's video streams. But I also see Ring as either needing to improve the hell out of their technology or kind of get left behind. So we're not going to see Ring as being the leader in the industry, especially in my house, because the thing won't freaking connect with a gigabyte up and down. So I think, the idea is great, but Ring is the slowest horse in the race. So if we're going to make an agreement with any company, I don't think it would be Ring.
Okay. Right now, the only company that I know of that does it like this is Ring. At least they're the ones that are advertising it. You know, it's probably the best way to put it. So, okay. All right.
Any other business?
I'm good.
We're good? I have one comment. I don't know if it'll.
You can't see it. You can't see it. The chair's in the way.
You have to stand up. There you go.
Uh-oh. Sweet, I got a shirt on too.
My comment for the day. and my wife's sister's Marshall cap. Very good. Motion to adjourn. Meeting adjourned.
Have a safe fourth, everyone.
Have a good one, everybody.
Thanks, guys. All right. So I'll go ahead and get that signed to get it through. Sounds like everybody's okay with it. Yeah. So
I got a ticket for being a